Hi there. You know, there are so many millions and millions of you all over the world who watch this show and have reached out and told us so. And you know what? I just want to say thank you for believing in the truth that we try to tell. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is The Week in Review.
I've decided the best way forward is to pass the torch to a new generation.
All our enemies should know this. Those who attack Israel will pay a very heavy price.
Did you see that? That's Joe Biden. He's out as a U.S. presidential candidate, at least. And we told you that would happen, what, about 5 months ago? Meanwhile, his boss addresses Congress. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is The Week in Review. Let's do it. So, let's get started. It's absolutely remarkable how once again, in the very last week, it seems like everything has changed, right, and continues to change. And joining me now to talk about some of these changes is one of my favorite guys in the whole world, not to mention a good golf partner from time to time, the host of The Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik, Dr. Wilmer Leon. So, Wilmer, thanks for joining us.
As always, Rick, it's an honor. Pleasure to be with you today.
All right, let's try and do some smart, or at least some pseudo-intellectual smart talk. Think about the optics of this that we're about to talk about right now, because I just kind of find this fascinating, right? Think about this for a minute. So this presidency of the United States right now has never looked as weak and as feeble as it looks right now. And that's because of old age, right? It happens. It's going to happen to all of us. Well, the leader of Israel has taken over, optically speaking, his position, the position that usually where the president of the United States stands, right? Addressing Congress, no less, with vim and vigor, and giving a speech where he gets a standing ovation. Think of the optics of those two images right now. First, I'll give you just a little example, Wilmer, of Mr. Biden last night speaking. Nobody seemed to care or watch it, but anyway, here it is.
When Ben Franklin was asked, as he emerged from the convention going on, whether the founders have given America a monarchy or a republic, Franklin's response was, a republic, if you can keep it.
I think he was trying to say Continental Congress. That's what the teleprompter says, but obviously he couldn't read that word, so he said convention. He called Benjamin Franklin Benjamin Franken. He looked dazed, he looked confused, he looked weak, he looked feeble, he looks like he can't talk anymore, at least not, he can't put a sentence together, and it was just, I don't know, you and I have talked about this so many times, but the idea that this guy's talking on television on the same day when he literally relinquished Congress over to the guy who is the real president of the United States, who's the prime minister of Israel, those are my thoughts. What do you think?
Oh, well, I'm glad you said that he meant Ben Franklin, because I thought he was talking about Al Franken from Minnesota. Thank you for that clarity.
The comedian. Right. Yeah.
The optics, you're absolutely right. This shows the weakness of the American presidency. It shows how co-opted our politics has become. Both sides of the aisle are obviously beholden to AIPAC and many of the other lobbies that are championing their interests. Yeah. And when you allow a war criminal, mm-hmm. and someone who, if any of the members of Congress had had any guts, could have had him arrested on the spot,
yeah.
And failed to do so.
Yeah.
That just shows you the complicity. It shows you the weakness. It was nauseating.
Yeah, and here's the situation now. And by the way, when you say war criminal, this is not your opinion. This is the opinion of both the United Nations and the International Criminal Court. Just to be
correct, safe,
I don't want people thinking, "Who's this guy to call the president?" No, you're not calling him that. He's officially been determined to be so. So,
yes.
just for the record, because you're my buddy, and I don't want you to get some heat when you
Thank
don't
you.
Deserve it. So, anyway, so here's Kamala Harris now, the vice president, officially. I guess you know they've circled the wagon. She's in. Seems to be, by the way, I should mention this. She's being, so far from what I've seen, very well handled, very well rolled out, the way you roll out a new brand if you're you know, a company and you've got a new type of bread or a new type of whatever, you know, a box of cigarettes or a new shoe or something. She's being rolled out like a good product should be rolled out. So far, they seem to be doing that pretty well. But look at this chart, though, because I think we should keep this in mind as we consider that our country always goes around the world telling everybody how what a great democracy we are and how they should be like us when they choose their leaders. This was done by the New York Times. Now, remember, the New York Times is not a fan of the Democrats. Is a fan of the Democrats. And it's interesting. They tend to be more to the left. So here they are. They asked all the writers at the New York Times, who do you think has the best chance of beating Trump? Who do you think is the strongest candidate? This is before she was, or right about the time she was named. And look at her picture there on the left compared to all the other candidates. She is the riskiest choice as the president of the United States. Now, the only reason I'm putting that up is that's the New York Times saying this, Wilmer, not us. But I think it goes to the point, right, as to whether she's really the people's choice or not. And it seems to me that she's not. So given that scenario, given the fact that she had a horrible race in 2020, given the fact that people really didn't vote for her, they voted for Joe Biden, I mean, can we go around the world saying, look how democratic we are in this choice?
No, not at all. First of all, because the Democrats' primary season was truncated at best. They, in a number of states, other viable options were not allowed, mm-hmm. or even non-viable options, were not allowed on the ballot. So Joe Biden was appointed, and now that he is stepping down due to obvious cognitive decline, they have anointed Kamala Harris. Yeah. I was amazed at how quickly the media shifted. Yes. And how quickly the money is pouring in based upon her name, and particularly in a conflict with James Carville's piece in the New York Times last week, where he said this process needs to be open, this process needs to be transparent, and that she should be part of a pool of options, mm-hmm. but it should not be given to her.
What the point you just made is the point that we make when we go around the world thumping our chest, telling people that their elections are unfair, that somehow they were rigged, and that the politician they had chosen is the one that's being anointed, and they never gave the people of that country a voice. What I just said describes exactly what the Democratic Party has done, exactly, to the T.
And it's what the Democratic Party did basically with Joe Biden, because there are those who will tell you that Joe Biden wasn't selected to beat Donald Trump. He was selected to beat Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, listen here. Here's what's interesting. The Democrats used to be the party of new ideas, right? I mean, at least when I was growing up, it seemed that way. Fewer wars that they used to talk about, you know, McGovern, et cetera, taking power from the establishment and giving it back to the people. Now they are the establishment. They have become so far out there as the establishment party that is old and very unwavering. They've relinquished new ideas to Republicans. And here's an example of what I'm talking about. When was the last time? You know, and I know Vance is good, Vance is bad, everybody's got their issues and stuff, but when was the last time you heard a Democrat on a presidential ticket say something as honest and as anti-establishment as this that you're about to hear?
Now, in 2003, I was a high school senior, and I had a political position back then. I believed the propaganda of the George W. Bush administration that we needed to invade Iraq, that it was a war for freedom and democracy, that those who were appeasing Saddam Hussein were inviting a broader regional conflict. Does that sound familiar to anything that we're hearing today? It's the same exact talking points 20 years later with different names. But have we learned anything over the last 20 years? No, I don't think that we have. We have learned that if we beat our chest instead of engage in diplomacy, that it will somehow produce good outcomes. That is not true. We learned that if we talk incessantly about World War II, we can bully people and cause them to ignore their basic moral impulses and lead the country straight into catastrophic conflict.
When the hell was the last time you heard a prominent Democrat, no less a Democrat on the presidential ticket, say that kind of thing, tell that kind of truth? Sorry for raising my voice, but I was kind of excited to hear somebody say something that the rest of the country thinks, but none of these people ever talk about, including the media.
The last time has been a very, very long time, as Hakeem Jeffries champions the United States reinvading Haiti, as Gregory Meeks signs off on weapons to Ukraine and to Saudi Arabia, as Linda Thomas Greenfield champions genocide in Gaza. The answer to your question is I can't. As Kamala Harris went to CARICOM trying to convince the CARICOM states to back to be the black face on the white imperialist reinvasion of Haiti. I call that minstrel diplomacy. It's been a long time, Rick.
I'm hearing.
But wait a minute. J.D. Vance is also the guy that stood before the American people 3 years ago and said Donald Trump is the next thing closest to Hitler.
Yeah, no, I know. Listen, that's why I said this isn't easy, right? There's some things about Kamala Harris. There's a couple of things about Kamala Harris I'm liking now. Now, I don't know if this is BS, but they're putting out a report that she's getting rid of all the neocons in the State Department, that she's going to get rid of Sullivan and she's going to get rid of the head of the State Department. I don't know if this is true, but I like hearing it because I think it's a good thing and I think it's necessary. But who knows?
But the question is, who's she going to replace him with?
Yeah.
Because look at how close she is to Hillary Clinton, the neocon of neocons. And she was a former Secretary of State.
Yeah.
And she's the one that convinced, or one of the two or three that convinced then President Barack Obama to go in and take out Muammar Gaddafi in Libya.
Yeah.
So if she's that close to Hillary Clinton, which means she's that close to Madeleine Albright, which means she's that close to Brzezinski, then who's she going to replace him with?
Yeah, no, and her husband's a Wall Street puppet, and she's in the pocket of AIPAC. No, listen, I'm not telling you I'm jumping on the Kamala Harris bandwagon. I'm just saying this gets complicated when you look at, you know somebody like Vance. There are things that I go, wow, I really like this guy, you know? And I talk to my friend Tucker, and he's kind of high on him as well. But then I look back at his record, and I also see some things that make me wonder. I mean, I'm a journalist. I'm just going to look at all parts of this story and then try and take it apart. And right now, it's too early, and it's too complicated for polls or for determining who's what when it comes to American politics. By the way, speaking of American politics, this got ugly. The head of the U.S. Secret Service, did you watch this? The agency that's supposed to be protecting the president and all dignitaries, well, she resigned. It came after she was viciously savaged yesterday by members of Congress.
The Secret Service has a leadership problem, and it falls on you.
It is a miracle President Trump wasn't killed.
Director Cheadle, because Donald Trump is alive, and thank God he is, you look incompetent. If Donald Trump had been killed, you would have looked culpable.
Now, Director Cheadle, would you agree that this is the most serious security lapse since President Reagan was shot in 1981 of the Secret Service?
Yes, sir, I would.
And, do you know what Stuart Knight did when he was in charge at the time of the Secret Service? Do you know what he did afterwards?
He remained on duty.
He resigned.
So, she deserves to get the crap beat out of her, and she did. The Secret Service, the way they handled this assassination attempt was deplorable, horrible. It's like Keystone Cops kind of crap. I agree. I get it. But it also tees me off a little bit to watch these incompetents accuse someone of being incompetent, if you get my drift, and taking advantage of the opportunity for their 15 minutes to appear on cable news, looking mean and nasty, like they're doing their jobs. Give me a break.
Well, to that point, somebody needs to ask them the question, how did they vote and pass her nomination in the first place.
True.
Where did she come from? Because I don't think that she was promoted from internally, from within the Secret Service. I think she came from with outside the organization. So how did she get through the vetting process in the first place?
Yeah.
So as what is the adage? When you point your finger at somebody, you got three more pointing back at you?
Yeah. And by the way, and I'll just say this before we go to break, because I've thought about this an awful lot. It's more complicated than just an incompetent Secret Service that did a bad job during that act. I mean, this should be, and this is something we never do in this country. This should be a whole conversation about guns, about what we should do, about weaponry, about mental health in this country and how out of control it is, about the relationships we have between law enforcement and the citizenry. This is this whole giant panorama of interesting discussions that this could be the moment that we could be talking about those things. Instead, we turn it into, you're an idiot, you need to be fired, okay, bye. It's like, okay, that's it, that's the end of the story? These people voted for that A-15 to be in anybody's hands so that today in America there's 121 guns for every 100 people. And now they're surprised that some nutcase with an A-15 took a shot at somebody? Get the hell out of here. Anyway, let's go to a break. When we come back, boy, we've got a lot more stuff to talk to, including the Bibi Netanyahu speech. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back to Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez, recapping a wild week in U.S. politics in particular. Boy, it looks like we're starting to get into the real political season. Look at all the topics that we're talking about. Joining me once again is Dr. Wilmer Leon, co-host of the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. Great show, by the way. You can find it. And I'm telling you, it's very well done and very thought-provoking. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has arrived in the United States of America. And the reception has been interesting, to say the least. Take a watch.
I'm a Jewish American. My grandparents survived the Holocaust. And growing up, I was always told that we should never let anything like the Holocaust happen again. That's why I'm here today, protesting the genocide of the Palestinian people and calling on our government to enact an arms embargo on Israel and send no more weapons to the Israeli military.
We're here today. We don't want our tax dollars funding genocide. We are willing to put our bodies on the line to say that our Jewish values and our values as people mean that we cannot be funding this.
Yeah, that was sort of impressive, but I thought that soundbite, as we like to call him here in the business, of this young man, Jewish young man, who says, my grandparents died in the Holocaust, and I've always grown up being told, we shall never let it happen again. We shall never let it happen again. How ironic, Wilmer, that this time the folks who are conducting what this young man calls the Holocaust is Israel. Many of the people who basically survived the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. Wow. Wrap your head around that.
Let me quickly say, make a correction to the statement I made in the last segment. Kimberly Cheadle came to the Secret Service from PepsiCo.
Yes.
But before she got to PepsiCo, she was a member of the Secret Service. So I think she served about 8 years. So I want to make that correction.
And that's why they had the Doritos mentioned, because apparently PepsiCo owns Doritos. So just
to the question at hand, what that sound bite demonstrates is how off base Benjamin Netanyahu is, because he continues to try to equate Judaism and Zionism as being one and the same. And what that first young man and that other young lady were saying is they're Jews, they're not Zionists.
Yeah.
And it's very important that people be able to make that distinction.
Yeah.
So when they are saying, and they are basically validating what we've been saying for a very long time. How can a people who suffered and endured the tragedy of the Holocaust turn around and impose those very same genocidal atrocities on another people?
Yeah, it's interesting.
And how can the United States fund it, back it, and pay for it?
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because Benjamin Netanyahu has come before lawmakers to speak about why he has the right to kill as many Palestinians, regardless of what the vast majority of Americans think, and he says he will continue to do so, in fact.
All our enemies should know this. Those who attack Israel will pay a very heavy price. That's what total victory means, and we will settle for nothing less.
Total victory. Interesting choice of words. By the way, 53% of Americans, and the number is growing, by the way, hate this guy. Hate this guy. 53% of Americans hate this guy, and they hate what he's doing in Gaza. And yet Congress is sitting there giving him a standing ovation. Is it because they have to? And how democratic is this, Wilmer?
Well, the have to is an interesting part of the question, because if you understand how this lobby operates and the handlers that they assign to various members of Congress to ensure that those members of Congress stick to the party line, and if they want to be sure that they're getting what they pay for, then the answer is yes. And in terms of getting what they pay for, folks, just go to the New York Times and you can read, yeah, AIPAC pledged $100 million to intercede, interject, interfere into the 2024 American election.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my, I'm not making that up. Go to the,
you sure? You sure it wasn't Russia? I thought it was Russia, though. Are you sure? I thought it was Russia.
Oh, well, it always is. Of course, we know Russiagate.
Russia, you know,
and
Russia.
We don't want to even get into that.
But Russia puts up two Facebook posts critical of Hillary Clinton, and they're accused, right, of interjecting themselves into the election.
And these don't guys, forget China.
Yeah, this guy comes over here and says, "I'm coming to Congress to speak," and they say, "Aye, aye, sir." I mean, They even said they'd threaten to arrest anybody who disagreed with them. This is nuts. By the way, there are a couple of elected officials out there who are pushing back. Bernie Sanders, Peter Welch, Tom Massey. Most of them are Democrats, but not all. Let's take a listen.
To the best of my knowledge, however, tomorrow will be unique in bringing Prime Minister Netanyahu to address a joint meeting of Congress. It will be the first time in American history that a war criminal has been given that honor. Frankly, this invitation to Netanyahu is a disgrace and something that we will look back on with regret.
Mr. Netanyahu's war has been carried out with our warplanes, our tanks, our guns, our bombs, missiles, and bullets. I will not be attending Prime Minister Netanyahu's address tomorrow. While I welcome a constructive discussion on how to end this conflict and achieve lasting peace and security for Israelis and Palestinians, I'm not interested in participating in a political stunt.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting to watch this because those guys, I guess, are in a situation where they're either old enough or they have enough money and they don't care. But very few people in Congress can do what those guys did, because as soon as they do that, they will be primaried, they will be pushed out, they will be destroyed by the media, and it'll all be done with Israeli dollars, which we give to them, and then they use to buy our politicians. If that's not the most ironic damn thing I've ever said in my life or have come out of my words, I don't know what the hell is.
Well, Massey's point was incredibly well taken. The one thing that he didn't mention was the tanks and the bullets, and that's in violation of American law.
Hmm.
And again, I'm not making that up. Look it up. That's in violation of the Arms Export Control Act. That's in violation of a number of American laws. So we are violating our own law in supporting genocide.
Before we run out of time, since you raised that point, I want to talk about your old girlfriend, Kamala Harris, and the fact that I'm still not sure what she's going to do in this situation. I do know this, though. They decided to hide her during Netanyahu's speech. They took her out of her normal seat and told her to disappear and that she would get a private meeting with him later. What do you think of that, other than the fact that it's dishonest?
This is no time for subtlety. This is no time for Chuck Schumer to come to the speech but not shake Netanyahu's hand. This is not the time for Kamala Harris to disappear from the speech but then meet with him privately on the side.
Yeah.
You cannot negotiate for the sake of political expediency on the front end, and then try to claim the moral high ground on the back end. That's called hypocrisy.
And I like you for telling it like it is. You always do. Thanks, partner.
I try.
I appreciate spending time with you. Always do. Dr. Wilmer Leon, thank you. And thank you for watching us once again. And I always say this, remember to look outside your own boxes, because truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you again very soon.